accession number 20484, reel 3.
Derek Kirkbride, reel 3. Were you able to do sniping work in the Reichswald?
No, not really, no. It's just, just on the advance all the time, just keep your eyes open in the end there. It wasn't time to do anything like that. It wasn't static. You only do sniping when you're static, see, or when you're with the leading sections in advance. That's all. But I suppose after that, I suppose it was getting near about March, and then we had to go to Venray again to be prepared to cross the Rhine. And then we done more boat training there. That was in Buffaloes and all sorts of craft we was doing it in, you know. In there, and then we was taken to, I forget the name of the place, so I suppose about 4 miles from the Rhine, and we stopped there for briefing, I suppose about a week. And while we was there, I think it's more artillery come up than there was commandos. See, we had a gun per man, I think, when we crossed the Rhine. We had what they call a creeping barrage, and just before we crossed it, it was 200 FE Lancasters bombed it, a place called Basel. And we crossed it 2 miles upstream in Buffalo that we went over. And number 46 Commando went over first to make a small bridgehead. Then we followed through. And then after the Lancaster bombed, they had a green flag come up, light, very light, and we went in. All the brigade went in, and the craters there done more damage than anything else. And our object was to capture. It was a cable factory. That was by the sidings, Marshall sidings. But when we got there, it wasn't a cable factory. It was a they made lavatory pans and sinks and things like, which is a blooming good thing, because all the plaster we had for making slit trenches, you know, in the factory.
For making slit trenches?
Yeah, well, in the factory, we piled them up. Barry, like a save us, because it was all open. Instead of digging, we put all these up.
Like barricades?
Underweight, plasters and things like that, cement, yeah. And, of course, it's all the railway. I don't know where he was getting stonked. They kept on attacking us, reinforcements coming in. And then at 10 o'clock the next morning, we crossed over at 10 o'clock at night. 10 o'clock the next morning, the Yankee Airborne dropped in front of us. And after a couple of hours, there was no artillery, so it was all small arms then. But then when the Yankee Airborne, it collapsed. We was all right, because they kept on counter-attacking us, see. But we held it, and then I think a battalion of Cheshire Regiment come over to help clear the wars to Basel. But then once the airborne had dropped, the fire had finished. They withdrew, give up.
So was this factory you talked about at Basel?
Yeah, well, that was a factory. That was our object to capture it. Basel was a big place, and we just had the quarter of it. Just one quarter, that's the old brigade, and we was at 4 or 5. We was at the end, by the railway sidings and all around there. See, then after that, it's all open country. But by the intelligence section, it's supposed to be a cable factory. But when we got there, it wasn't a cable factory. They made lavatory pans and sinks and things like that.
And so were these sacks full of cement?
Yeah, plaster, what they make sinks with, yeah.
In bags?
Underweights, yeah. So they're pretty good. We stacked them up, you know, and they're kind of sure of a shrapnel, right? You know, wouldn't have direct it, wouldn't stop a direct it. But shrapnel, what later was coming over, shelling and mortars and that, yeah. And if it went on top of you, then you've had it. But luckily, it was all around the sides, you know, blast. That stops the blast, really, yeah. like a pillbox, really. You know, you're on a pillbox. You like well, sand. You, when you put sandbag that over a shelter, in it, it stops the blast. It doesn't stop the direct tip, but it stops the blast.
What did you think to the German resistance on the?
Oh, rally? Very good. They were in. Oh, yeah. They kept on coming up. They wouldn't give in. They wouldn't know. But there you are. Of course, there was a lot of these railway trucks. See, they used to fire through them and all. You know, so you couldn't go in them. Because they cut them all in half as they were, you know, they're firing. So you got by the wheels, you know. Give you some protection, that does. Yeah.
And you were acting like an ordinary infantryman on the Rhine Cross?
Yeah, anything. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I just thought, oh, yeah, once you're not sniping, you're with the infantry, yeah, yeah. You're with the leading party all the time. Oh, yes, that's all you do, yeah. It's only when you're in a static position or you're advancing, that's when I call you up. We'll do a bit of sniping or if you see anything.
What happened next?
Well, from there, after that, we went through a... we advanced, I suppose. I forget the names of them now, but it was a little village outside. And our troop commander, there was an army troop commander, Captain Coventry. And of course, we had a night week for a few days there on the iron ration, and we were all getting hungry. And we got to this place, and he said, right, he said, well, I think we'd better go out for some food because Germany had plenty of food in Germany. And so we scouted out and brought chickens back, and meat, and things like that. And we started a fire, and we had a good meal. See, before the invasion, we had a pep talk with Lord Lovett, and he says, when we land, wherever we are, he said, they've been occupied, he says, and they'll be starving, so don't take any of their food. Don't take any food at all. But once we got into Holland, was going up with Germany. He wasn't gone there, but we had our brigadier then was Mills Roberts. And he said, we're going to enter Germany, he says, and you can help yourself for anything. That was the order of it. We help ourselves to anything. Yeah. As you was before, you couldn't do anything because occupied can't, but now they're not occupied. They've taken everything, so you take it. That was our brigadier, that was. Yeah. So some of those farms, you ought to see the stuff they had. And our next object then was Osnabrück. We had to capture Osnabrück. The 6th Airborne surrounded it, and we had to go and capture it. And I suppose after a couple of hours, it was ours. You know, there was a lot of firing going on, sniping and things like that as we was entering it. But once we got that covered, the white flags come up, and it was ours by midday. And there's some of the stuff they had in there, the grub they had, yeah.
Such as?
Pardon?
Such as?
Oh, they had eggs, meat, everything. Pickled eggs, bacon, in the cellars, because there were big apartments in there. There was each compartment there, I suppose, it's a cellar. Well, it's a walk-in cellar, really, like rooms. And each flat had their own room. And it's full of grub. All sorts, you know, tins and jars, pickled this and pickled that. Oh, they live well. Yeah, they wasn't starving. Yeah. And from there, we was there for a couple of days, and we withdrew. Oh, no, we went in transport then, and we got to a place called the River Weasel. Apparently that there's a Scotch battalion made a small bridgehead over it, and the engineers was putting a bridge across, but they're getting stocked so much, four or five, had to go over and make the bridgehead bigger. So we went over, we were in cockles, those collapsible boats, and rowed ourselves over, and we went along the embankment, because they were dug in, and we bayonet charged right through. And we got to the dike, and then the Jerry's come over, aircraft, the old Wolfbrother come over, bombed the bridges, the engineers, they come along and started machine gunning us along the embankments there. But we could see the Jerry, the load of Jerry's there, but then it was only a commando, only 400 blokes, so we the brigade withdrew us back to the small bridge end with the battalion, of the Scots battalion, and we withdrew back there. And then the next day, the old brigade come over, and we done a night infiltration right round. I think it's a place, the village of Well. And we were attacked in early hours of the morning. And why it was defensive, they had a rocket site there. Yeah, that's why it's so heavily armed.
You mean V2s?
Yeah, V2, yeah, rocket sites there, yeah. So when we when we was told to go over, that's 4 or 5, the old brigade said, "It's already only a Pioneer Corps over there, you'll be all right." Because when we got over there, it wasn't.
So were you in a bayonet charge when you were...
Oh, no, along the river we was. Along the river. Yeah, oh, yeah. Right away, see, they dug in along the river. And of course, they got out. All of us, yeah. And then... say we got up to the dike, and then we were walking up the dike, and it's high ground, you could see them moving, forming up, Jerry's, you know. We didn't stand earthly, really. That's what we had orders to withdraw. But it's only a commander of us, and then they took the rest of the brigade over, and we'd done a night infiltration, the same place we went along the bank, and up by the dike, around the back of the village. Of course, when we got... But lucky, they was withdrawing, because they knew what was happening. And but that's what it was. They had a rocket site there. But when you go into the houses, some of the houses there, that they was all prepared. Like the Jerry's stacked all their stuff up, loot. They went and leave so quick, they left it there behind. That was the... Basel. The next one was the River Alla. The Alla River, that was, yeah, that was a shocker one. That was, we had to do another night in Phil. We crossed it, they bombed the bridge, but it was a viaduct. But they bombed the railway bridge on the viaduct, on the dry land. So, of course, what we done, we scrambled across, went across the water. And it was a very woody country that was in. And then was, Jerry was dug in there. We had a battle there, proper bayonet charges there, yeah. Right the way through, it was there for about 2 or 3 days. And eventually, they kind of collapsed at the finish. And that's when we'd done a bayonet charge, the extended bayonet charge, the commander, extended bayonet charge through the woods. And they had smiles of guns shooting us all. And then the old Jerry, Spitfires, the Hurricanes come out, the rocket firings, typhoons. And they started firing in front of us. And after a while, right, a few days after that, it was only these flamethrowers they had, Jerry's. Got to cut them out, otherwise, yeah, just show you. But it went so quick. The battle really, you know, it was a fierce fight for a few days. Then after that, it kind of collapsed. I suppose that, you know, once you thought that they couldn't get through us, they withdrew.
Did the Germans stand up to the bayonet charge?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And it was number 6 commander. They went across, they done it, and they had an old own. Because they shouted and that, you could hear them, anyway. On that, and that's where it was our object. When we crossed the Yala, our object, like 4 or 5, was capture a dig in on a high point, which we did. That night we did. We didn't, wasn't much firing at all with it, but we could hear it going on lower down. That's number 6 commander. So after a while, like we was told to withdraw back to the bridgehead, make the bridgehead smaller, it's too big. So we withdrew back to the bridgehead, dug in again, and of course then it was fine because you were over the radio, our telly going on, what was going on, the tanks here and the tanks there coming up. And the pit was doing it and fighting there, and that's how it was for a couple of days. And then after it kind of relaxed, as it was, 4 or 5 was told to extend the bayonet charge across the woods. And where we dug in that night, or the previous night, Jerry had taken our positions up and could say it was firing on us as we were going through. We lost a lot of blokes then, I'm afraid, yeah.
And this was crossing the River Alla?
Alla, yeah. And I suppose after a few days it was finished, didn't it? Yeah, they withdrew back. And that was the whole, and that was nearly enough. The war was nearly over then after that, you know. That it was the Elbe after that. We done the Elbe. Across the Elbe. A place, what's the name of it, Lunenburg then. That was the same way, I went over in Buffaloes. But the Lancasters never bombed it or anything like that. We just went through the, a couple of miles away from it and went in through the back of them, yeah. And they gave in after a while. And that was right to say it was near the end of the war.
Was there any resistance in crossing the Elbe?
Little bit, just little bits, yes. Yeah, because a lot of them was dug in on the embankment, really. But with that, see, we had the what they call the mountain regiment, Aristers, see, with us all the time, come with us, and they'd done a creeping barrage. And when they, you know, when you get a stonk like that, and they're very accurate, I thought, all right, give in. Well, they did at the finish because, you know, it's nearly over. Yeah. So we finished up at a place called Oitein. That's on the Baltic coast.
Called what?
Oitein.
How do you spell it? Never mind. No, don't.
Oitein. E-I-T. I've got it in the book over there. Mm. Oitein. It was near the Baltic coast, yeah.
Did you come into contact with the Russians?
Well, I didn't, personally, but some of the barracks did, yeah. Some of them did, yeah. Yeah, they got those patrols there.
What were relations with the German civilian population like?
Scared. Because there's a lot of slave worker camps there. And, of course, they withdrew, and they, like walking skeletons they were, and they wanted us to protect them, really, yeah.
Did you protect them?
Well, we couldn't do much about it, really. We just say stay in, and until we got them sorted out, you know, slave workers, yeah, because they walked around, poor buggers they were, they're starving. And, you know, it's, what can I say, you couldn't do much about it, really, you know, you just say that you try to, you know, behave yourself, but you couldn't. They couldn't do that, they've had enough. Then we moved to Oitein then. The war hadn't reached it, Oitein, and our troop was a displaced person troop. All the displaced persons had to report to our troop, and we'd send them every day. It was a convoy of different countries, and we'd put them on their convoy and take them to their country. But Russia was Wednesday. We got them on one side and off the other side. They didn't want to go back. The displaced persons, they wanted to stay where they were.
Didn't want to go back to Russia?
No, they wanted to stay back, they wanted to see where they were.
So what happened to them?
No idea. Because we were down there, we were there for about a few weeks, and then we come home in June, that was it. End of May, beginning of June, and we go out to Burma again then, but then you know, they put the bomb down and that finished it, thank goodness.
Did these displaced persons say anything to you about returning to Russia?
Oh, no, because so, all the other people, I mean, the Dutch, the French, Norwegian, they wouldn't go back, couldn't get back quick enough. But the Russians, see, right, they couldn't speak, I could understand them, but that was a shocking day trying to get them on. You used to get them on one side, and they used to jump up, and they used to say, I'm not coming back, you know. And we used to get them on eventually, fire overheads to keep them on the trucks. And then days, I mean, because then where we was in billet there, big billet we was in, A troop, and a couple of 100 yards up the road was a big naval barracks, German naval barracks. And all the Germans, like the German forces, had to report there. They used to march in and report to there. And then they used to come out and go to kill, clear up the damage done. All of them there, the Germans. Then they had a load of food. We had to stack the food up to feed them, all the Germans. But then, as I say, was only there for a few weeks, and then the Royal Occupation took over then. So what happened then, I don't know. But it was a lovely place for 18, because the war hadn't finished there, and hadn't reached it. And it's like our lake district, big lakes there was there.
So you went home for demob?
We went up to go to Burma. We was going out to regroup to go to Burma, but then they dropped the bomb, didn't they? So then it finished it then. Then we come out with them civvy billets in Eastbourne again, and then when they dropped the bomb, they disbanded the commandos. I was number 44 group, demob group. 46 group and over went to Hong Kong, but they asked for volunteers, but I said no, I had enough, I didn't want to go to Hong Kong, so I waited till I get demobbed.
How do you feel now about having served with the Royal Marines in the war?
Very good. I'm glad I've done it. Yes, I'm glad I've done it.
Did you have any after effects?
Well, not really. I mean, it takes a job to get in a civvy street, I suppose, after doing what you've done. But because then I was married then. I got married just after I came back. And I had responsibility then, didn't I?
Why is it a job to get back into civvy street?
Well, it was in them days. It was, well, what can I... It's very hard to say, really. I mean, when you're in a team, really, and your commander, you're told what to do, but you had to do it. You had to do it, but you knew what you had to do. You did have to think for yourself, put it that way. But once you come out, you was in civilian life. You had to think for yourself. You know, you done it right. See, but in them days, I mean, we had a job. I mean, being a commander, we was there, we was in civil billets, but you might have to parade a few miles away. But you had to be there on time. Otherwise, you have got, like, called return to unit. They didn't want you. See,
Had your job been kept open for you in service?
Oh, yes, I went back in the print for a while, yeah. But then after that, I started up on my own. I would build a decorator then, and I enjoyed that, and I'd have a look back, really, on that, no.